Hello, and welcome back to I Promise to Shoot You If You Become a Zombie. So, we're going to try the second part of the Black Dahlia case again, and maybe we will be able to get through it this time and get it done. I hope y'all have had a great few days, a great week. I hope y'all enjoyed my last episode. I know it was short, but I believe it was something that needed to be told. And I also want to explain how excited I am that my podcast is now being played in France and the United Kingdom. That is so awesome. I'm so excited. Thank you all so much for listening. And let's get started. So, Elizabeth Short's body was actually identified by her fingerprints. Remember, a few years before she was murdered, she got arrested. And so they were able to trace her fingerprints back to that, and they identified her positively. So once Elizabeth was positively identified, reporters from the Los Angeles Examiner actually contacted her mother, Phoebe Short. She was still living in Boston at the time, and they told Phoebe that her daughter had won a beauty contest. And they lied. I don't think they were nice people, but that's just me. Anyway, so they said that your daughter won a beauty contest, and they're interviewing her and trying to get as much personal information about Elizabeth as they possibly can. And then once they get all of the personal information that they can from Phoebe, then they decide to tell her, you know, we kind of lied. She did not so much win a beauty contest as she was murdered. And if you will fly back to Los Angeles with us to help with the investigation, we will pay for your airfare and your accommodations. So Phoebe did. She flew back, and they told her that they wanted her to help with the investigation, but once she got there, they wouldn't even let her near the police or any other reporters because they wanted to save their story. They didn't want her to mess it up. So yeah, that happened. So the media really sensationalized Elizabeth's murder. They ended up nicknaming her the Black Dahlia, and they called her an adventuress who prowled Hollywood Boulevard. So they were really just, you know, making her not sound like the best type of person, which kind of aggravates me. But they did. That's what they ended up calling her, and that is where she ended up getting her nickname. On January 21st, 1947, a phone call came into the office of James Richardson, who was the editor of the Los Angeles Examiner. This phone call was from someone claiming to be the murderer, and he was congratulating Richardson on the coverage of the story, and he said that he planned on turning himself in, but not before letting the police pursue him further. The caller also told James Richardson to expect souvenirs of Beth Short in the mail. So that phone call was a little suspicious, but anyway, that's what the phone call was. So on January 24th, a mysterious manila envelope was discovered by a postal service worker. It was addressed to the Los Angeles Examiner and other Los Angeles newspapers. It had individual words cut out from newspaper clippings and magazines. And if you're a true crime fanatic like I am, you understand what I'm talking about. These people, murderers or kidnappers or whatever, will get magazines and newspapers. They'll cut out the words, and then they will put the words that they are wanting to say on a piece of paper with those individual letters. I think it's basically a way of avoiding handwriting analysis. You know, I think that they think that if they have the newspaper clippings or the magazine clippings, that they can't be identified by their handwriting. So anyway, that was on the envelope. The face of the envelope, the message that was on it, said, "Here is Dahlia's belongings." And in the envelope, there were several personal items of Elizabeth Short's, her birth certificate, her credit cards, and everything like that. And then there was also a little address book, and it had a name embossed on the front of the address book. That name was Mark Hansen, and the stuff that was in the envelope, it had actually been cleaned with gasoline, which was also kind of suspicious because that's how Elizabeth Short's body was when they found her. Like, they were not able to get any evidence off of her body because it was cleaned with gasoline. So those two things, yeah, they kind of connected. So even though the person that sent this envelope, like I said, they did clean the belongings in the envelope with gasoline and everything, the police were still able to lift a few fingerprints, partial prints or whatever, off of the envelope, and they did send them to be tested by the FBI, but unfortunately they didn't lead to anything. It wasn't enough on there. So the same day that the envelope was found or sent to the examiner, there was also a handbag and a shoe that were discovered in an alley on top of a garbage can near Norton Avenue, which was 2 miles from where Elizabeth's body was found. And of course, that didn't lead to any information either, any new suspects or anything like that. So on March 14th, an apparent suicide letter was found scrawled on a piece of paper, and it was stuffed in a shoe, and the shoe was found in a pile of men's clothing. The letter basically said that it was from the killer and that they have been waiting to be found out by the police. They have been waiting to be discovered from the police, but that hasn't happened, and that they were too much of a coward to turn themselves in. So the only way out was to kill themselves, basically, is what the letter said. So after finding all of that, the clothing, the envelope, all that, and they were not able to find any fingerprints or DNA from the killer or whoever sent this information or whatever, whoever owned the clothing or anything like that, the police went ahead and claimed that Mark Hansen, the man whose name was embossed on the address book, as a suspect. That was the closest connection that they could find, so they deemed him a suspect. So there actually was a connection between Mark Hansen and Elizabeth Short. He was a nightclub owner, and he was also an acquaintance of Elizabeth's, and she actually stayed at his house with some friends. So Elizabeth's friend, Ann Toth, told investigators that Elizabeth had actually rejected sexual advances from Hansen, and she suggested that if he was the killer, that would be a good reason why. Hansen was eventually cleared, though, and they were back at square one. Other than Mark Hansen, the police had investigated and interviewed 150 men. As suspects in this murder. That is mind-blowing. Out of 150 men, they couldn't find anything. Like, anyway, so they had interviewed a lot of people as suspects, but they were all cleared. There were over 750 investigators, including those from the LAPD, that were working Elizabeth's case. So the city councilman offered a $10,000 reward for... ...for anyone with any information leading to the arrest of the murderer. And with that, there were several false confessions being called in and reported. And this is my thing. This is what I don't understand. So, there's a reward. So, you're going to call in and you're going to confess to this murder, this highly publicized murder. And what are you hoping to gain from this? Like, are you thinking that they're going to give you the money anyway after they lock you up? Because I don't understand confessing to something that you didn't do, because there's a reward. You're not going to get that reward either way. When they find out you're lying, you're not going to get it. And if they don't think you're lying and they arrest you, you're sure not going to get it. So those are just my little rambling thoughts. But there were false confessions, several of them, once the reward was offered. So on January 26th, the examiner received another letter. This time it was handwritten. And there in the letter was a location that the supposed killer agreed to meet with the police and turn themselves in. So on January 29th, the police waited at this location, waiting for the killer to turn himself in. And of course, he did not show up. Big surprise. Instead, at around 1 p.m. that day, another cut and paste letter was received. And it said, "Have changed my mind. The police would not give me a square deal. The Dahlia killing was justified." On February 1st, the Los Angeles Daily News reported that the case has hit a brick wall with no more leads to be investigated. The LA Examiner continued to run stories in their paper about the murder, and the Black Dahlia case was actually front page news from the Examiner for 35 days straight. So based on the way that Elizabeth's body was found when she was murdered, the lacerations, the way that her body was cut in half, and it was so precise, the police felt like the murderer was a surgeon or a doctor or somebody that knew how to do these precise incisions with no trouble. So that was also my thought when I first read that, because it just seemed like to me the way that they cut her, it just seemed like somebody that knew what they were doing, that had experience in this. And so the police felt the murderer was a doctor or a surgeon. And by the spring of 1947, her murder had become a cold case. In 2003, one of the original lead detectives, Ralph Asdell, told the LA Times that he believed that he had actually interviewed Elizabeth's killer. He was a man that was seen with his sedan parked near where Elizabeth's body was discovered. There was also another suspect, George Hodel Jr. He was considered a suspect, but he was cleared. But George's son, Steve Hodel, actually found what he considered evidence that his dad was the murderer. Years after this happened, George's son, after George died, was clearing out his dad's belongings after he passed away and found a little box, a small little box that fit in the palm of his hand. And it had, you know, normal thing, like family pictures of Stephen and his siblings and mother. And then he found a picture of who he thought was the Black Dahlia. And this man has actually devoted his life to proving that his dad was the murderer of Elizabeth Short. And nothing has been officially said or anything like that, that George was the murderer. But Stephen is the only one, because like I said, there's been a lot of confessions over the years, almost 500 or more. But this man, Stephen, was able to find a lot of evidence that the police could not deny or argue with. So around the time of Elizabeth's murder, there was actually a serial killer going around. They called him the torso murderer because he was cutting people. So authorities thought that he could be connected. He could be the killer. But eventually the two cases were found to not be connected. But in 1980, new evidence implicating a former... torso murder suspect was found. The suspect was Jack Anderson Wilson, and he was interviewed, and they were actually connecting him to Elizabeth's murder. So they were actually going to arrest him. They were pretty close to arresting him on her murder, but he died. He ended up dying on February 4th, 1982 of a house fire. So he was not arrested. There was also another lady that claimed that she witnessed her father murder Elizabeth Short when she was 10 years old. She told them this in 1991, but she claimed that she witnessed this. Janice also wrote a book about her father being the killer, but it was later dismissed by her stepsister, claiming it as trash. She said that Janice believed this, but that it was not true. She said, "I know this because I lived with her for 16 years." There also ended up being a lot of conspiracies, a lot of people thinking that there were police cover-ups or connections between different people, but they all ended up being disputed or not completely proven during this whole time. The whole case has got so many questions and so many theories from so many people, but there's never been any concrete proof. I don't know. It's very mind-blowing. Also, her dad, when he was told that they found the body of his daughter when she was murdered and they found her, the police told him that they found her body, and he basically told them, "I don't care. I don't care that my daughter's dead. I don't care." So, not liking him very much either. But there's also no proof that he did anything. Like I said, there's nothing concrete. There's several books, several movies that are out. There's actually one that stars Scarlett Johansson called The Black Dahlia. There's books. So many people have became famous just for talking about the case. This is also the reason that some investigators say that they have not been able to solve this murder because of the involvement of the public and the press. They say that they've kind of construed it, messed it up so much that they haven't been able to clearly point anyone out because there's so many people claiming to know who did it or claiming that they did it, that nothing concrete can be found out. There were also people that were putting rumors around about Elizabeth herself, some claiming that she was a prostitute, some claiming that she couldn't have sex because of some deformity or sickness that she had, some claiming that she was pregnant. I mean, just all kinds of crazy rumors. Like, I feel so bad because all these people saying all these things, and really all they need to focus on is the murder itself and try to catch the killer. All this extra stuff does not matter. It doesn't matter if she was a prostitute, which that was not ever confirmed. It doesn't matter about any of that. It just matters what happened. And the media really did play a part in them not being able to discover who the killer was because there's so many circulations of rumors going around. So Elizabeth is buried in Oakland, California at the Mountain View Cemetery. And after her two younger sisters were grown and married, her mother actually ended up moving to Oakland to be closer to her daughter's body. She eventually did move back to the East Coast in her 70s and lived there until she was 90. So, in February 1947, 2 weeks after Elizabeth was murdered, Republican State Assemblyman Don Fields was prompted by the case to actually start a sex offender registry. So, California was the first state in the U.S. to have the sex
offender registry. And I think that's pretty awesome. I think that's great. At least one good thing did come from her death.
So after her death, so many books, so many movies, TV series, specials, all of that have been released. Newspaper articles, magazine articles, just all kind of things have been released about her death. Of course, she has never been given justice. The murder has never been officially named or found or anything like that. And unfortunately now, even if they found out who it was, there's no way to prove it because the person would be dead or almost dead by the time they discovered it. So it's just such a sad case. I honestly don't think we'll ever know who did it. And that's the saddest part of all. So thank you for listening. I'm sorry it took me so long to get this out to you. I have really struggled with this one. But I hope you enjoy it. And y'all come back and listen to the next episode. Bye.